Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
Tell you a story that I'm going to reference back to it a couple specific times during the event, and it's a story of what really started to change for me that precipitated, actually, think about it, me being here. 3 months after my son was born in 1989, I went water skiing on the Illinois River. And it was me and my family. I had two little babies, and we let them stay with their aunt. And I thought it was going to be a really great day. But it's really interesting because there are moments in time that divide your life. Before this and after this. And inside, there's some sense that after this, nothing will be the same. This was one of those days for me. It was supposed to be just a happy, fun day like any other day. And through sheer ignorance, I got separated from the boat, and I got sucked through a dam. That's the dam. That picture was taken around 1940. That tugboat actually was pulled under the water and broken into little pieces and entirely pulled through that dam. I went through on the far side, not that side, but all the way down on the other end. And I was supposed to die in that accident. And I came out the other side. I had broken my back. I was injured pretty bad. But I managed to get myself to grab onto a branch of a tree as I went further down the river. Now, while I was doing this, I was trying to get to shore because your instinct says, get the hell out of the water. You know, when you get sucked through a dam, it's like not a good time. And I got to this branch that was hanging from this island, and I was able to grab onto it. And I'm hanging onto this branch, and I'm thinking to myself, I don't want to die today. I don't want to die today. And I was like, how the hell am I going to get out of this situation? And one of the main things that I was trying to do was not to go in shock. When I pulled my hands out of the water, I realized that I had skinned all the skin off my palms when I slid down the cement wall on the other side of the dam. So I couldn't hold on very long to this branch, and the current was really strong. So I began to unbuckle my life vest and literally push the branch inside and then snap the buckles around it. And after I got that done, I started to cry, and I was asking God, if you just will let me live today. And in that second, my son's face flashed across the screen of my mind. He was only 3 months old at the time. And it occurred to me, so weird things occur to you when you're hanging from a branch. It occurred to me that if I died that day, I would have left my wife and my kids with nothing but problems. So I made a deal. I said to God, you know, if you'll let me live today, I will promise to figure out why I'm not doing the things that I should be doing. And then when I figure that out, I'll teach people for the rest of my life. And I got out of that situation. I had broken my back. I was only one of two people at that point in time that ever survived going through it. The guy that went through a year before me was a paraplegic. And I started thinking to myself, why the hell did you live? Now, it wasn't just on my own that I started thinking this thought. The people, like the Army Corps of Engineers runs that dam. And they sent people down to interview me. The state police sent people to interview me. The National Wildlife sent people to interview me. And I'm like, what the hell are all these people doing here? And I was in the emergency room. And they kept asking me the same question. How did you survive going through this? And I was looking at them Like, this is the stupidest fucking question that I've ever heard in my life. I have no idea how I survived going through this. And they're looking at me like I have some magic answer or something. And I said, I don't think I'd even be here if it wasn't that the fact that I have a life vest on. It wasn't going down the river that killed most people. It was getting sucked through that killed so many people. The year before I went through that dam, there were two guys on a motorboat. They were fishing a little further up the river. And their motor went out. And the boat was, both the boat and them were sucked into the dam. But nothing came out the other side. So they were stuck in this boil on the inside of the dam. So they sent three firefighters down with scuba gear to get them out, and all five of them died. So apparently, like, this was this really big deal to them to figure out how I survived going through this. And I said, you know, it would seem to me that if so many people have died going through this dam, like, you would, up where that sign that says danger, stay out 300 feet, that you'd like run a cable across the water or something. So like somebody could grab onto that. Like if that was there, I would have much rather grabbed the cable than get sucked through the dam. And they said, you know, we thought of that, but we were concerned it would get too much debris on it. I was like, really? It took them 25 years to put a cable up in front of that dam. 25 years. And when I came out of there, I was at home recuperating. And it kept going through my mind, why did you live? There must be some reason that you survived this. And that's what our minds do. You have experiences in your life, and your mind tries to find the reason that you're having the experience. And I thought, well, there must be something going to happen. There must be something important in my life. There must be something that's going to change. But nothing changed. I healed. I went back to work. I was working on a dock, driving a forklift. I had quit high school when I was 17. I was absolutely going nowhere. Shortly after that, we ended up on food stamps, and we were living next door to a drug dealer, and I would come home every day and see the look of disappointment on my wife's face. She would tell me stories about how sometimes she would have to take the kids to the park because the guy next door was beating his wife, and they were screaming at each other. And I felt so much shame that I had led my family into this situation and I didn't know how to turn it around. And I would ask people. I would say, you know, I'm stuck in this situation. I don't know what to do. What do you think I should do? And they would all say the same thing. You shouldn't have quit high school. I'm like, yeah, no shit. I figured that part out already. What do I do now? And the answers ranged basically from work a lot of overtime and be a really good employee to the extreme. Work a lot of overtime and be a really good employee. And I thought, there's no way out of this, because this is before the internet. You couldn't even take classes online. And I was working 6.5 days a week, all the overtime that I could get. The answer seemed like I have to go back to school in order to get out of the situation. But I didn't have the time or the money to do it. So I literally was stuck. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, make a decision and do something different. There was nothing else to do. I couldn't get a job anywhere else. So I would sit down on my lunch breaks and I would try to figure out, like, okay, I'm gonna take this like incrementally. How do I move the needle just a little bit? If I could get from 20,000 a year to 40,000 a year, that would probably change everything. Now, I hadn't even considered the fact that I was overspending at the time, and that was a big part of the problem. But I was looking at it like, okay, if I get these nickel and dime raises and I work really hard, maybe in 30 years I could get to 40,000. There was no inspiration in that at all. So I did what most people do. I just kept doing the same thing. like I was somehow waiting for something else to happen that would give me permission to move out of this situation. And I honestly thought that if something was to show up, that I would make a different decision, that I would literally make a different decision to do something else. If you'd have seen me at that time in my life and you'd have said to me, you know, if something was to show up, you wouldn't do it anyway, I probably would have punched you in the mouth. No, I'm not kidding you. I was so frustrated. You could not tell me I did not want to change my situation. But here's the truth. I didn't. I didn't really want to change it. But I didn't know that. See, one of the biggest problems that we have is not that you can't get to where you want to go, not that you can't do it really fast, not that the opportunity for you to do whatever it is that you wrote down on that paper isn't here right now. It's that you really don't want it bad enough. And what I mean by that is that it's what you don't know that you don't know. You don't realize what you're not willing to let go of in order to not only see the opportunity that'll take you from here to here, but to actually do it, to make a decision to actually do it. Most of us have so many paradigms running around in our mind that we stay in this place of constantly saying that we want to change something, but rarely does anything ever change. So I keep chugging along doing this. A few months later, it's now like February in Chicago. It's cold. I was working at night. I was cold. I was tired. I had been reprimanded twice that day. And I was in the back of this trailer, and I just broke down sobbing. Like I had hit this point of just, I wanted to give up on life. And again, I said, God, what is it? Show me something. Anything. Show me something. Shine some kind of light in the direction that I'm supposed to go. And a little voice in my head said, change your attitude. It was instantaneous. The second I asked that question, that voice showed up. And I've often told people it was eerie as fuck. Like, I would swear that voice was outside of me. I literally turned and looked to see if somebody was there. And then I started thinking, okay, how the hell could that possibly do anything? So I thought, all right, that's what you got to work with. Change your attitude. Okay, how am I going to do that? What does that even look like? Now, I have been hearing that since I was a kid. I would come home with poor grades, and my dad would go see the teacher. And the teacher would say, you know, David's a pretty bright guy. If he would just change his attitude, if he had a better attitude in school, he would probably get better grades. And I would go home, and I would get smacked. Bam! Change your attitude. Go to your room and stay there till your next report card comes out. That was their answer. That was their answer. From one quarter to the next, I spent it sitting in my room, supposedly, like, go in there and study. Nobody ever taught me how to study. But they didn't know what to do with that. My dad's way of looking at life was like, suck it up, this is what you have to do. But I really didn't understand what this was. Like, what do you mean study? I'm reading the book. You're not studying hard enough. Go back to your room. Does anybody remember when you learned multiplication, you had flashcards? You guys remember that? So you had these flashcards. And I would go in there and I would do the flashcards over and over again. And then I would come out and I would hand the flashcards to my mom. And I'm like, okay, quiz me. And if one card, like usually this happened within the first three, she would hold up a card and I would get it wrong and she'd like, go back and study. So it was this constant reinforcement that I was doing something wrong. Over and over and over again. Absolutely no celebration of any kind of a win whatsoever. So I thought, well, Nobody ever showed me how to change my attitude. My parents didn't sit down and say, okay, listen, the teacher says you have a poor attitude. Let's work on changing that. Here's what that looks like, David. Here's what it is that you need to change. Here's how we can help you with this. Here's how you can show up differently. They never said anything like that. So I said to myself, find someone that I can relate to. So the guy that owned the company that I worked for had built this, like, it's like a $500 million company. It was the largest food importer in the United States at the time. And he started it in his garage in Chicago. And I could relate to that for some reason. I thought, well, if he could, you know, he didn't go to college for a ton of years and didn't seem to have any special gifts. So he started this thing in his garage. And I thought, what's the difference between him and me? And there were three things that showed up instantly for me. One was that I realized he must like what he does. And I hate it. I freaking hate it. And I made no bones about wake up in the morning, I fucking hate this. What illness can I create in my mind today not to go to work? Right? See, some of you have been there. I thought, okay, so I'm going to act like I love what I do. The second thing was, he must have done a really good job. Now, I was constantly being reprimanded for not doing a good job. So I said, okay, I'm going to give every day my very best. Every task that I do, I'm going to do it my very best. I was loading trucks. It wasn't that complicated. And then the other thing that stood out to me was that he had built this warehouse that was engineered like it was one of the first of its kind to be able to process these orders based on stores, and it had all these computers and conveyor belts and all this stuff to bring the food down in the right order for the right store. And they would do tours for other companies that want to see how they innovated this. And he would walk through with a bunch of other people in suits all the time, the owner. And he would not walk past an employee without stopping and saying hello, ever. He would always say hello. How are you? How's your family? Good? Good. And I thought, he really respects people. I don't. I was mad at everybody. Everybody. So I thought, okay, I'm going to act like I love what I do. I am going to do every job to the best of my ability, and I'm going to treat everybody with total respect, complete respect, just for being a human being. In 30 days, my income went from $20,000 a year to $62,000. In 1989. And I thought, what the hell? How can that even possibly be? It seemed so ridiculous to me that this part of my life changed so fast. And everybody was around me was going talking about how lucky I got. I didn't know anybody personally. Like, there was nobody in my family or friends that were making $62,000 a year. I did my high school years in a little suburb right outside of Chicago called Berwyn, and the median income there was like $20,000. And most people were just blue-collar laborers of some kind. Most of the people there didn't go to college when they got out of high school. And here I am, I triple my income in 30 days, and every time I would look at the check, I'm like, fuck. How is this even? Like, I couldn't believe my name was next to the number. So I thought, there's something about what I did that caused this to happen, and I have no idea what it is. But I was like, okay, I'm just going to keep doing that, those three things. Then I came across, this was actually a couple of years later, not too far, I came across Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich. And right in the introduction, he wrote something in there that jumped off the page at me and made me realize that the ability to go from 20 to 62 had been there for 2 years, but I never saw it. I could not see it. I did not see the opportunity to do that. Not only did I not see it, the opportunity itself did not even register in my mind as anything that I would ever want to do in my life, ever. There was a guy, his name was Drew Batty, he was from Whiting, Indiana. Every Tuesday and Thursday, he would show up in a fuel truck, and he would put diesel fuel in the trucks that we had in the lot that we were loading, and all of those trucks had refrigerated trailers because we carried food. And he had to fill those tanks up with diesel fuel. And then when he would get done, he would come to me, and I would have to mark off that he got that. He would have the trailer numbers down and how much fuel he put in it, and I'd have to make sure that that was on the manifest of everything that was loaded that night to make sure that it all had fuel in it. And I got to know Drew pretty well over a period of 2 years. And I used to make fun of Drew. I was so arrogant. I thought I was so much better than him in some twisted way. Because diesel fuel stinks. And when you're working with diesel fuel, you're going to stink. And he would come in and he would just reek. And if it was snowing, he had to be out there in the snow. If it was 100 degrees, he had to be out there in 100 degrees with all the mosquitoes. If it was rainy, he had to be out there in the rain. And I thought, by being on this dock and at least having a roof over my head, that it wasn't as bad as what Drew was doing. And he drove a bomb on wheels because he carried fuel. So one day he says to me, "Didn't you tell me you'd rather drive a truck than the forklift?" I'm like, "Yeah, well, I drive a truck on the weekends for this company, but I can't get on full time doing it." He said, "Why don't you come to work for us?" And I was like, "Get out of here." And I started rattling off all those reasons that I just told you back to him as reasons why I thought that was a stupid idea. And I ended it with this. I said, "Besides driving a bomb on wheels, Drew, how much could you possibly make doing this?" He said, "Well, last year I made 50. And I was like, "What?" I said, "You're full of shit." He said, "And I'm coming next Thursday." He said, "I'll bring you a check stub you could see for yourself." I said, "Are you serious?" He said, "Yeah." So he did. He came Thursday and he brought me the check stub, and sure enough, he had. And I said, "Let me ask you another question. In your company, has anybody ever died driving one of these trucks? Like, anybody ever tip one over, get in an accident, and it blew up?" You know what he said to me? "Yeah. 2 years ago, guy tipped one on I-65 going through Indiana, burst into flames, and he burned to death." I'm like, "See? You're crazy." But I couldn't get the 50 out of my mind. And it just so happened that their business increased, and they were looking for somebody else to drive. So I decided to look into it. 30 days later, I was driving a truck for that company, and my income increased to $62,000 immediately. But I was so floored at the idea that I had suffered for 2 years in my situation, and that opportunity was there the entire time, and I couldn't see it. I had to know why I couldn't see it. And not only that, I immediately started like climbing the ladder at this company. The petroleum company that I worked for was a family-owned business. It had been around since the early 1900s. And they started off delivering home heating oil in Chicago, and they eventually expanded. But nobody that drove a truck for the company was ever promoted into management until I went to work there. Before I left the company, I was in charge of expanding it across the country, and I never went to school. All I did was maintain those three things in my attitude. That's all I changed. Every day, I showed up as if I loved what I did. I did the very best of my ability, and I treated everybody with total respect. And it kept getting better. Now, that was a period of 7 years. In that 7-year period, I decided that I was going to study. I was going to find out why I had changed. What were the components? Because I thought, you know, if I could figure this out, There's nothing that I can't accomplish. So I thought anyway. And it led me on a process of reading books, going to seminars. So those are back in the days when you had to go to a library. For those of you that remember a library. You had to go to a library and check out a book. I didn't even know where to start looking. I didn't know that there was a self-help section. I didn't know that there was a professional development section. I had no idea. But one thing led to another, and I started picking up books and programs. I started going to seminars, and I wasn't doing that to get better. I was doing it to learn more about myself. I had a lot of questions going on in my mind about life, about why we're here, about success, about why so many people are damn miserable, because my family was miserable as hell. It didn't seem that that's the way that life should go. So I began to study. And what I found out is that all the information that you'd ever possibly want is already here, but you have to be willing to study in order to get to it. Otherwise, you're going to continue to go through life with the knowledge that you have, and nothing is going to change. Except it will get worse. Because whatever you have in your life now that's not working, one of the things you'll really understand by the time we leave here is that if you don't change that, it will continue to grow. It will continue to get worse in your life, not better. And because we don't know what to do, we stay in this position of not doing anything. I don't want to deal with it right now. I got too much going on right here. So here's what I found out over a period of 7 years. Everything that we possibly want is already here. The moment that we desire it or need it, it's already in our life. And that through the power of a decision, we can change it instantaneously. And you can do things that seem like magic, or they seem like it's somebody else's life. Like, you can change so fast and so continuously, it'll blow your mind. If you understand what it is that's stopping you, and write this down, because I'm going to hit this several times, and this is something that most people really do not understand. Most people actually do not want to change anything. Now, I want to make sure you hear me when I say this. It's not that you're not happy about something. You may even have something in your life that you're really unhappy about, like when I was working on the dock. I hated it every day. But what I found out was that I didn't want to change. It doesn't matter what the reasons are. I could very easily go over all the reasons why I didn't want to change. But you will only see what it is that your mind is telling you to focus on at any point in time. And you're only going to focus on the things that are important to you right now. So it doesn't matter how unhappy you are. It doesn't matter how long you've been stuck. It doesn't matter if you're in a bad relationship. It doesn't matter if you're sick. It doesn't matter if you're completely fed up with the way everything is right now. Until you move it from that place to a place where you honestly want to change, nothing changes.
Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.